Hello, I'm Claire Chaffee, and you are listening to Just Chat, the podcast where we speak to those making and shaping the law. No politics, no bias, just chat. Judge Kara Sheed was appointed to the bench of the New South Wales District Court in February 2019. This was after being both a prosecutor and public defender for more than 20 years. As a prosecutor, Judge Sheed specialised in homicides and child sexual assault cases. As a public defender, she acted for clients accused of extreme violence and depraved acts. Now, Judge Sheed appreciates more than ever what it takes to be a good advocate and what it takes to protect one's mental health under extreme pressure. Judge Sheed joined me at the Law Society recently to share the good, the bad, and the sometimes hilarious of her career. Kara, thank you so much for coming into the Law Society to join us today for our Just Chat podcast. So you were a prosecutor with the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions for more than 20 years. How did you end up there?
Purely by chance, in some ways. I came from a family that had no lawyers, so I went to Macquarie University, choosing that because it was closest to my home. And then, like everybody else at law school, I applied for summer clerkships in my penultimate year and chose to take up an offer from the DPP, thinking that crime was interesting because I'd liked it at uni. And from the moment that I arrived, I just loved it. Even when I spent 3 months photocopying exhibits for a trial, and that was all I did for 3 months, I still loved every minute because I was reading them all. And I found it fascinating from the day that I started until today, because I'm still practicing in crime.
And what was it exactly that you found fascinating or so interesting?
Definitely the different types of things that come up. Constantly learning new things. I'm still constantly learning new things about the law, about many different aspects of what it is to be a human being. Criminal lawyers are often faced with interacting with people in the darkest moments of their lives. So from whichever perspective you're coming into the system, you have the capacity to make a difference. So if you are interested in Simon Sinek's work about why we go to work, being a criminal lawyer, to me, I always had a why. I didn't realise that was what it was called at the time, but there was a very real sense of contributing to the community and also utilising what I saw as my own personal skills in a professional way.
And Kara, you went on to specialise in homicide cases and child sexual assault cases. Was that a deliberate path that you took, or was it just sort of where you ended up in the progress of your career?
It was really where I ended up. I think when I started, there were perhaps less women than there are now, and routinely victims who are predominantly female, or at least were in those days, would often request a female prosecutor. So because we had to meet them and they had to tell us what had happened to them and then assist them through the court process. So as an instructing solicitor, I instructed in many trials where there were child sexual assault prosecutions. So that led to an interest in me. So when I was a Crown prosecutor, I never shied away from those briefs. I particularly enjoyed those cases because they're legally very challenging. They're, from an evidentiary point of view, they're some of the most complex cases that you can do. And then, of course, the homicide trials that I did were very interesting because they're often investigated by highly accomplished police who have a lot of resources, which some other investigators may not have. And I really enjoyed what was in those days earlier briefing in homicide matters. So I'd become involved earlier on instead of quite close to the trial date and be able to form the team, the prosecution team early, make decisions as a team, prepare well for the trial, and then present the trial. I have always enjoyed the courtroom environment. I've always enjoyed speaking to juries and communicating with juries. That was a particular love that I had immediately when I started doing trials as a solicitor, because I was a trial advocate for 3 years before I was a Crown. Although it was terrifying and I was very bad when I first started, I really was. I tried very hard and I tried not to make mistakes, but I made multitudes of errors. I learnt from them. But even when I was stuffing up and judges were yelling at me, I was still enjoying talking to the juries.
What kind of mistakes were you making? I mean, you're so accomplished. I find it difficult to imagine you stuffing up in a courtroom, but enlighten us.
So many times I made mistakes. I asked improper questions of witnesses. I began cross-examinations with what I thought was a fun, you know, a fabulous rhetorical flourish, instead of which it was an inadmissible question that got an objection and I got shouted at by the judge. I remember once asking the judge who I appeared in front of a lot whether or not I should show a witness a video. Of course, that's a decision for the advocate. And I'd already shown the jury through another witness, but I thought to myself as a prosecutor, is it unfair not to show this witness? But it was really boring and it went for an hour and I didn't want to subject the jury to it unless I really needed to. And I thought, well, the judge will tell me if, to be a fair prosecutor, I should do it again. Of course, I should never have asked. And he yelled at me in front of the jury and I felt so humiliated because he told me and everybody else in the courtroom that it was my decision and why was I asking him and make up your mind. And he went on, he was a bit of a cranky judge, he went on and on and on. So I just decided, well, after that, I'm not going to bore them with this video that goes for an hour. So I chose not to do it and that was fine. But things of that nature, when you do something for the first time and you're coming at it from a different perspective, it's interesting. Everybody in the courtroom is focusing on themselves and their own tasks. So when you take a step up, so from an instructing solicitor to the advocate appearing, everything was different and I had to think about it from a different perspective. So in taking that leap, you just make some errors due to inexperience. And most of the time, people are kind and help you not to overly embarrass yourself. But I certainly did embarrass myself in lots of ways. I remember once telling a witness that there was some evidence that they must not give because it was prejudicial to the accused and it was irrelevant. And then I launched into a series of questions, culminating in a question which insisted that the witness answer, and the only answer could have been to tell us about the material that I'd said, too prejudicial, must not say. And the witness was looking at me in a way that was like, are you crazy? Why are you asking me this? It had completely slipped my mind. It was just an error, what the reason was. And I was trying to close off another forensic gate that I thought was important. And he mumbled something that was very bad in response to my question. And immediately I knew what I'd done was wrong. And I solved the problem. And, in court, when you make a mistake, you've got to fall on your sword and say, that was an error. How can we fix it? And we did fix it. But, I look like an idiot because I was.
Cara, it's so great to hear you looking back on your experiences and laughing, and you've obviously learned a great deal along the way. I'm interested to hear about your experience of when you effectively jumped the fence from prosecution to public defender and you took the role of the deputy senior public defender. What inspired you to make this change, and how different was that to, 20 years in prosecution?
It was a change that I wished that I had made sooner in hindsight. I always wanted to do defence work because I never felt that I was ideologically a prosecutor or a defender. I loved prosecuting, but I also very much admired the people that I appeared against. I was friends with a lot of defenders and I thought it was a great thing to do. I don't know why I didn't do it sooner, probably because I loved what I was doing. And that wasn't the reason that I left, because I didn't like what I was doing anymore. I just thought, I really want to try it and I really want to do it. A couple of judges that I was friends with had been public defenders and a lot of people urged me to make that move and thought that I would enjoy it. And I also thought that it would be a good broadening of my skills. I wanted and had wanted to, for quite some time, go to the district court bench ultimately. And I thought that judges are better judges if they've seen both sides of the bar table. So it was part of a desire to experience that and also to be a better lawyer.
And you've spoken in the media previously about how some people in your circle, your friends and colleagues, actually found that transition very difficult and couldn't quite come to terms with the fact that you were a prosecutor and now you were defending alleged criminals. Tell us a bit more about that.
That was very shocking to me because I had not realised that quite a large number of my friends and family saw me as putting away the bad guys and that that was a good thing. I always saw myself as one of the players in a criminal justice system, which works well because all players are competent and robust. And the number of people that said to me, I won't speak to you if you get these criminals off the street. And I was surprised that what I took for granted, which was that everybody understood the presumption of innocence. Everybody accepted that people were entitled to competent representation, that was not a view broadly held amongst people I knew well. And I thought, gee, I've done a poor job of educating these friends and family. And some people said, I'm not going to speak to you anymore, jokingly, but I could tell that underlying it was a sense of going to the dark side, as it were, and helping to get criminals off the street, which thought never occurred to me at all. I didn't struggle one moment. I did wonder, frankly, going to the public defenders, whether I would find it difficult to cross-examine children in child sexual assault cases, because I have a very firm view, and I did at that time, that cross-examination tended to be overly long, quite traumatic for children, and tactical in ways that it didn't need to be. And I thought, how am I going to go with that? Am I going to be able to effectively represent my clients? And the answer to that, the first trial that I got, a barrister's competitive nature, out it comes. I advocated for my client. I didn't have any difficulty with it, but I did put my money where my mouth was, and I cross-examined in a way that I felt was respectful, consistent with my instructions, and did not belittle the witness in any way or do any of the things that I hadn't admired when I'd seen them done by defence counsel in the past. That was the only thing that I was concerned about, and I needn't have been concerned about it. So the public defenders I did the rolling list court in the district court for 12 months. So I was before a judge doing sort of high volume work in the district court, which was a great learning curve for me. I made some, again, taking that leap, I made some funny mistakes when I first started representing people. I had a client, a discussion with him about challenges to the jury in a trial, and we'd been talking, and I, defence counsel, assist their clients with the challenges to the jurors. And I'd been speaking to him quietly, and he said to me, I don't really like number four. I said, oh, why not? And he mumbled something, and I said, oh, look, I think he's okay. Are you happy to leave him? And he said, yes, I will. And what I didn't say was that I didn't like number three. And I said, well, I'm going to take some other challenges. He said, okay. So we came to number three, and I said, challenge for the accused. And my client yelled out, no, not him, the next one. And the judge looked at me, and I looked at my client, and I thought, oh, my fault. I should have run through that procedure a little bit more. I think that might have been the first trial that I did. Luckily, the judge was very good humoured, and there was no problem in the end. But again, doing something new and coming at it from a different perspective, new skills. I was very lucky to be paired with a highly experienced legal aid solicitor, Sally McLaughlin, who instructed me in those trials. And her remit was to make sure that I didn't stuff it up, that I didn't do anything crazy, that I didn't, you know, step out of line. And she was amazing in terms of preparing me, and we worked as a really good team. She's a magistrate now, but we had the best time for 12 months where she prepared me really well, taught me a lot about what a good defence lawyer did in terms of interacting with clients and acting on instructions that were quite tricky sometimes, that didn't make the most sense, but running with them in a robust way and being persuasive. So I was very lucky to have the support of the other public defenders who answered every question. My chambers were Dina Yehia's old chambers. So Dina is a friend and a judge on the district court, and I hoped that by sitting in her chair by osmosis, some of her amazing defence skills would, you know, descend on me. I think they might have sometimes. I felt, you know, her intervention sometimes. And I had chambers next to Janet Manuel, who was a very experienced public defender, and we were both quite early birds, and we would get into chambers very early to prepare, and I would often ask her, you know, really stupid questions, and she'd answer them very kindly. And really, that's how most lawyers, you know, get on with doing something new. You talk to your colleagues and ask the questions and get great guidance.
Cara, you must have seen some pretty awful things in your time on both sides of the fence. How do you cope with that? Do you feel that you have a natural resilience, or is resilience something that you have learned over the years? And do you think that the work that you've done in the past has had any lasting impacts on you?
I think I am naturally quite resilient, and I've always had an ability to see the really awful things. You're right, I've seen some terrible things, that I've been able to see them as evidence and look at them in a context, a forensic context, and apply an analysis that is at one remove. So, but I used to also have strategies whereby, for example, I did a homicide case that involved the death of multiple children, and the crime scene photos were very disturbing. And I chose not to look at them until the very last minute. So I did look at them very carefully ultimately, but not until I really needed to. And I also, there was a lot of photocopying that needed to take place. I did all of that, and one instructing solicitor assisted me, and we did not ask other members of the team to be exposed to that. Ultimately, some were. But I think you need to be responsible yourself to ensure that you can maintain your own mental health, because it is an issue. I remember one occasion when I'd finished a very lengthy child sexual assault trial. It went for many weeks, and I felt quite emotionally depleted. It was quite a traumatic trial in some ways. It was a very difficult matter, and I was exhausted by the end of it and felt that I didn't really want to do another one of those trials immediately. And I got back to chambers after verdict, and I had another similar trial on my desk, and I went to the senior crown prosecutor and said, look, I'd really prefer to do something else. Have you got, you know, a nice stabbing or something like that that I could do instead? He said, how about a drug trial? No victims. And I said, yeah, that'd be good. And that's what I did. So I think you do need to be proactive to ensure that you are able to deal with what's coming up, to seek variation in the work if you can, and to look at it, each matter as it comes across your desk, and consider it as evidence. But look, I have wept at my desk through the tragic, you know, circumstances that people have found themselves in, and what human beings can do to one another is extraordinarily, you know, extraordinarily cruel and brutal on occasions. But that's very few and far between. And I'll give you an example of how mercurial my thought processes around this can be. I had one moment in court where I felt, during a closing address in a sexual assault trial, that I felt like I was tearing up in my closing. It was a very long closing address, and I had been very affected by the evidence of a particular witness, and I found it very moving, and I was quoting directly from it to the jury, and I had learnt the evidence because I wanted to look the jury, and I'm getting goosebumps now as I remember it, I wanted to look the jury in the eye as I said the words, repeated the evidence of the witness. And I felt my eyes welling with tears, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to abort the trial, because prosecutors need to be completely at arm's length. Like, it's not, you're representing the community, you defence lawyers are allowed to be a bit more emotional and a bit more emphatic, prosecutors need to be reserved. And I thought, oh, if the jury see me crying, that's unfair to the accused, and I could have an aborted trial after a very long trial. So I took a moment, I drew breath, I looked down, and then I looked up, and the jury were all crying. So I immediately stopped crying because I was delighted that they were emotionally involved in the story that I was telling them. So my eyes had no more tears. So it demonstrates that if you're looking at it from a where am I getting to with this defence case or with this prosecution case, in terms of argument or persuasion, it's a way of deflecting the possible emotional toll. But I don't doubt that from time to time I needed a good holiday to get away. I needed a good debrief with my colleagues, and traditionally that's what lawyers do. You talk to your instructing solicitor, or you talk to your, you know, barrister colleagues. That's really important, that you understand what each other is going through, and that you can, you know, we've all got terribly dark senses of humour. The jokes that are made in chambers should not be heard outside chambers, I expect, because I haven't really over the years come home and told my family a great deal about some of the nasty stuff, although from time to time, you know, you talk about what you're doing. So I worry that the family is exposed to a little bit more of it than I think I'm letting on.
That's an interesting point about relying on your colleagues, because the work that you're doing is not really work that you can take home to your family, or something that you would even talk about at a dinner party with your friends. Do you think?
Oh no, my friends are fascinated constantly at dinner parties. They would ask, what are you doing? Tell us all about it. And I've got one friend who I would, as a prosecutor, I would tell her my case, and she accurately predicted the verdict in every case that she asked me about.
Wow.
She was such a great litmus test for me. I'd say, this is my case. And she'd say, oh, not guilty. Or guilty.
Now that you're a judge on the district court, do you check in with your friend and litmus test your judgments?
No, I don't.
Look, I just want to touch more broadly on mental health in the legal profession. Mental health has been certainly a topic of discussion within the private profession for many years now. You have a long career in government. Since the beginning of your career and up until now, do you think that the discussion around mental health has changed at all? And do you think it's being taken seriously in the government sector?
Yes and yes. To me, when I first started, there was little discussion around it, but not any great shame if people felt unwell. To my experience with my own mental health and with other people has been very much, if you're feeling unwell because you've broken your ankle, it's just like you're feeling unwell because your mental health is not as it should be, and that people need to be offered the right opportunities to seek whatever treatment they need. Government, I think, provides very good responses in terms of resources that can be accessed, and it's increasing as well. As I was getting towards the end of my tenure at the DPP, I participated in voluntary psychological assessment, and there are many services. There are the Bar Association and Bar Council is very good at putting barristers who are under pressure with mental health issues into touch with the right people for treatment, supporting people in those circumstances. I think the conversation sometimes is muted necessarily because these are private issues that people don't want telegraphed. So sometimes, because help is sought in that confidential way and the help is provided discreetly, it may not be telegraphed as widely to other practitioners as it might, but that's appropriate in my view on an individual level. I think the message is out there well and truly that there's no shame in having a mental illness. I, from time to time, have had anxiety and spoke very openly about that to my colleagues at the DPP at the time. I had no difficulty at all around getting the appropriate assistance and getting treatment. It was a very long time ago now, but I remember very well the enormous support that I got from the Senior Crown Prosecutor at the time. And never once did I feel like I wasn't briefed in something challenging as a result of that disclosure. In fact, I was very well supported to make the disclosure and to seek treatment and then to feel well again and just continue on. So it wasn't something to do with work. It was something to do with my private life at the time. But many practitioners face challenges either because of the work they're doing or things that crop up in their life where you just don't feel great. So I haven't had the experience of it being a difficult issue for the profession to deal with. Having been on Bar Council, I saw under a number of presidents the amazing way that Bar Council dealt with practitioners, and the Bar Association, I think, has got great mechanisms for providing information. There's a lot of lectures that are given, the same with the DPP and the public defenders, at conferences and ad hoc education lectures. There's often a focus on the wellbeing of staff, and people are encouraged to attend. They do attend, they talk about it, and they're supported by their colleagues when they speak about it quite openly. And there may be some people that don't want to bring their private health issues into the workplace, and that's a matter for each individual. But I don't think there is any stigma anymore attached to people being upfront with how they are. I think vicarious trauma is a well-recognised aspect of being a lawyer, a criminal lawyer, any kind of lawyer really, and people need to be able to freely speak about it and hope that, which has been my experience, it's not going to be a problem.
So you were appointed to the District Court in February 2019. Tell us about that, and how has your life changed since you've become a judge, and is it what you expected?
Well, best day ever, my appointment. Look, this has long been my dream job, and it was everything I thought it was going to be and more. I have enjoyed every moment of being a judge since my appointment. Yet again, taking a step up, I've done some quite funny things that were not necessarily correct. I'm not going to disclose what they are. People who are in court with me, you know. But it's changed my life in many ways. In some ways it's less pressure, and in some ways it's more pressure. So it's, as counsel, I found life was very much comprised of peaks and troughs. So you'd be in court, cross-examining, addressing a jury, staying up really late, getting up really early and preparing. And then sometimes when that you were, you know, the jury was on verdict, for example, I had trouble focusing on my next brief during that time. So that'd be a bit of a trough there where I'd kind of sit around twiddling my thumbs, trying to do other work and failing miserably. But the work of a district court judge is all day, every day. So it has a different quality to it. I was lucky enough to be the deputy director before I was appointed, and that's a job that involves a lot of decision making routinely every day. So I think that prepared me quite well for a judicial role because I could, I'm quite decisive naturally, but as a judge, you're called upon to make decisions and get on with it and be as efficient as you possibly can. So the job is what I'd observed it to be with other judges doing it, and it was as enjoyable as I thought it was going to be, and more.
And where does your decisiveness come from? Because I often think, to be a judge, my goodness, you are responsible for effectively, you have huge influence on people's lives, on society at large. Where do you get the confidence to have, I guess, faith that you're making the right decision?
I think you just have to try to make the right decision. You have to accept that not every decision you make is going to be the right one, but you have to try to make the right decision every time based upon information. And I have no qualms whatsoever about saying in court as the judge, I don't know anything about this, and asking whoever is appearing before me to assist me. So I think you need to be properly informed and do what it takes to be properly informed. I think I'm lucky that I've done a lot of trial work and appeal work over the years, so I have a decent knowledge of the criminal law. So when things crop up, I try very hard to keep up with what the Court of Criminal Appeal is saying. So I read a lot of decisions. I read a lot of books. I enjoy that. I talk to my colleagues. We call ourselves law nerds, and we talk about what the law is. So I'm reasonably confident that for some things I'm up to date and I can apply the knowledge that I've amassed over the years to whatever the question is. And when something comes up that I don't know about, I'm equally very confident to stop and take the time to try and make the right decision. Equally so, I don't like to leave things for a long time because then I think things get out of control. So I like to try and get things off my plate. And I'm not a big agonizer about things after I've done them. Make a decision, move on, you know, to the next thing, because there's always a next thing. And I think that was the deputy director's work, was very good at training me in that momentum and not looking back. And I think we've got a very good appeals system that it means the buck does not necessarily stop with me. If I make an error, there's a way for it to be corrected. So I've just got to do the best that I can in the circumstances that I'm in, applying what skills I have with the assistance of very able people appearing in front of me. It's not just me. The information that I'm digesting is often prepared to a very high standard by the people that are appearing in front of me, and that makes my life very easy.
And I have to ask, have you shouted at any rookie Crown prosecutors yet from the bench?
I don't think so. I've certainly felt perplexed at things that I didn't understand, but I'm equally aware that as counsel, I knew 100 things that I couldn't tell the judge. So I'm often thinking to myself, why are you doing it this way? But then normally a thought that follows that quite quickly as well, there's probably something I don't know, so be quiet. So I think I'm learning to speak less as a judge, which is a challenge for me because, as you can tell, I like to talk. I'm trying to think whether I've shouted at anybody. I hope not. I hope not. Because I got shouted at a lot when I first started. It used to be much shoutier, I think, than it is now. Judges don't often shout these days, and they shouldn't. It's everybody in the courtroom. It's their workplace, and they deserve to be treated with respect and courtesy. That's what I expect. So I'm going to say no.
Judge Kara Sheed, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us today on Just Chat.
Thank you so much, Claire.
I'm Claire Chaffee, and you have been listening to LSJ's Just Chat. My guest today was Judge Kara Sheed from the District Court of New South Wales. Just Chat is a Law Society of New South Wales podcast, recorded and produced by The Story Mill, with music by Books Kid. For more episodes, visit lsj.com.au.